15, the year of our Lord 2015, and let me just say now. That's that. And there you go. Do that, do that, that, that. Alrighty, let's kick it all off. Yes, it is JS, and we're kicking it off in 3, 2, 1.
Finally found the most generic live show. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thanks for joining us here on a Thursday. Yes, it is a Thursday here on the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. Thanks so much for joining us. Here on a Thursday, it's strange to say, when we've been doing the show for a month in the old time slot, and just to move it into the new time slot of a Thursday, it just feels, something about it feels different. It's Thursday, it's 12:01, you know, it's different, you know, it's different, and we do appreciate you joining us, whether you're joining us live or on your hard drive. We do appreciate you joining us here in the middle of the day. We're making your Thursday lunchtimes even better here on the Generic Live Show. Yes, we have had a quick programming note. We have had a few hiccups with scheduling and that sort of thing. My scheduling has changed over the course of the last bit of the year, so we've had to move to this really bizarre time slot, but we do appreciate you adopting that. Now, I'm kicking off the broadcast today. People's favorite part of the show is when I get a little bit personal. I'm here to bring you the news. I'm also here to bring a kind of personal aspect, I suppose, to the broadcast. You know, I'm a person. I live life. I may sit here for 2 hours a week, bringing the news, and on other podcasts as well. But I'm, you know, there's certain aspects of my life that, you know, you live out, and you have to share those with other people. Now, a few weeks ago on the show, I brought you a story about the privatization of universities in Australia. I have a little bit of a follow-up / interesting experience on that front to kick off the broadcast, because some of the people, you know, have asked me if I have tried one of the external cafes that have opened up here on a local campus. Of course, I won't give out the name of the cafe to protect them, but I went, well, no, but I really should, and report back on what I feel about it. Luckily, it was an interesting experience. It wasn't a boring experience. There was things that happened in my experience with the cafe that are interesting to report. So, I was a little bit hesitant to report back on this, because I'm like, well, should I really be reporting on a cafe and slag-mouthing them on the internet? But you know what? They stole jobs off people. So, you know, there's fair, if nothing else, I am a fair person. So, I walked in there, and of course I was a little bit hesitant, because I have, if anyone's listened to this program before, I have slagged these people. They are businesses, and they are trying to make money. I understand that is their That is their purpose here. I'm going to mute my microphone while I sneeze. Excuse me. Yay, cough switch. Solo shows. Yay, solo shows. But I walked in there and I was a little bit hesitant to walk in. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to sit here and go, oh, it was an amazing experience to walk in there with a big happy smile on my face. You know, that's not how it worked at all. So I walked in there and there was two people before me. I was second in line and there was no one behind me. So for this whole time, keep that in mind, there's no one behind me, so I could suss out the place a little bit more. These two people were ordering lunch. They sell food there as well, so it's a proper cafe. Anyway, and throughout that, one of the people ordered. Well, they didn't actually order. The person behind the counter said, "said you guys order," but he said it in kind of a demanding tone, which is strange. And he's like, "Ah, yeah," kind of thing. So he brushed off a little bit. I'm not using names or anything, by the way. So I walked. It was my turn. So I only ordered a coffee, right? And I paid cash for it because at this place, if you don't pay up to $10, you will incur an FPOS fee of 50 cents, which, by the way, that's another rant for another day. It's much like my DST rant that I won't go on here, so it's not relevant. But anyway, so I walked up to the counter. I went, good afternoon, can I have a large mochaccino, please? Literally in that tone of voice. He's like, excuse me? Literally went, excuse me? And I went, oh, may I please have a large mochaccino? I was a little bit condescending at that point. Cause if you're in a cafe hospitality setting, the point of you being there is to take my order and pay attention. But anyway, that's besides the point. The point is, and he's like, oh, that'll be $5.20. I think I paid for that coffee. So I hand over a $10 note. And he said, do you have 20 cents? It'll help with our float. Mind you, they're not closing. This was at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 1:30 in the afternoon. They close at 4. So anyway, I knew I had 20 cents on me, but, you know, I'm making a big drama of it because there's no one behind me. And I like just, you know. By the way, when I first walked up to the counter, the guy said, you look awfully familiar from somewhere. So I don't know if he listens to this show or if he's just seen me around the place, because, you know, I am quite prominent on the campus there. So I said, oh, I might have, you know, shuffling through my wallet as, you know, a drama queen that I am when I'm not on the radio here. And I went through it and I went, oh yeah, I do have 20 cents. Handed it over. He didn't thank me for giving him 20 cents for helping his float. But anyway, he hands $5 back. So I think it was $5.20 and I gave him $10.20. So he gave me $5 back. So, or was it $4.20? I think it was $4.20 actually. $4.20, and he gave me $6 change. So I remember there was a coin in there too. So there's that. And I went, oh, thank you very much. And he's like, oh, I won't be a sec, which is fine. The end of the encounter was interesting. So I waited for about a minute and a half for my coffee, which is quick. That is quick service. So I will give them that. And he went, oh, large mochaccino. I went, oh, yeah, have a great day, as I do. I'm very friendly with baristas because, you know, I don't want spit in my coffee. And let me tell you, I'm a bit hesitant to say this, but the coffee was mediocre. It was not great. It wasn't the worst thing I've had, but it's not something to rave about. It's tolerable as per coffee's sake. So there you go. There's my experience into privatization of the universities. Incredibly mediocre. I understand that, you know, people have different experiences at different times when you go into these particular cafes. I understand that, as I just dropped something on the floor. I understand that people have different experiences in these different restaurants. But, you know, your point being there is to serve me, ideally, and to, serve me and satisfy me, realistically, but it was just incredibly mediocre. And the doors are not automatically. You have to press, you can enter, but you have to press to get out. So, that's fun. But anyway, there's my experience. I wanted to share that on the show because people like when I have personal experiences on the program. So, meanwhile, speaking of personal experiences on the program, if you listen to this program at all, we do keep track of the NBN, the National Broadband Network. We have another hurdle when it comes to the National Broadband Network. We report this on the back of the Optus network might need to be rebuilt entirely. So they're rebuilding the entire... They might have to rebuild the entire network of the NBN. So that's fun. Take that as you will. So Malcolm Turnbull, the Prime Minister of Australia and the NBN, has spent $800 million on a network that reports suggest completely needs to be rebuilt. As part of the coalition government multi-technology national broadband network, the government bought Optus's aging hybrid fibre coaxial HFC cable network, which originally rolled out in 1990s for pay TV for $800 million. But leaked government obtained by Fairfax Media revealed that the government's planning to replace the $800 million network at a cost of an extra $375 million. Excuse me. The documents claim that Optus HFC network is, quote, not fit for purpose and nearing the end of its life, surprisingly. It's 1990s. The 1990s, right? While other parts of it is simply already oversubscribed and it won't be able to deliver on the speeds promised by Mr. Turnbull and his government. These new plans would see Optus networks being rebuilt with other Telstra HFCs or fibre-to-node technology, which was originally planned for 38% of the network. On top of the huge cost blowout, which is already expected to be $15 billion over budget. That's right. The NBN is missing the rollout targets of 633,000 premises in 2017-2018, which they will now have to wait until 2019 at the earliest to be connected, these people in the original targets. Let's have a look. The initial agreement, which was made between the NBN and Optus in 2012, where it was approved by the government's Competition and Consumer Commission, the ACCC, under the grounds that the government would gradually decommission Optus's HFC and replace it with fibre-to-premises broadband connections. That's not the case. Despite all this, though, the deal was revised in 2015. The government will keep Optus's HFC network and make upgrades for audio listeners, that's air quotes, where needed for the same $800 million price tag. Opposition communication spokesman Jason Clare slammed the findings of the document, saying it showed, quote, more evidence of an absolute mess that Malcolm Turnbull has created for his second-rate NBN, quote, end quote, quote, it reveals the Optus HFC network, a key component of Malcolm Turnbull's second-rate NBN, is in far worse condition than Australians were led to believe, and the NBN Co. is considering rebuilding the network. Costing hundreds of millions, meaning hundreds and thousands of Australians will have to wait longer to get NBN, Mr. Clark said. Quote, nearly 1.5 million homes and businesses can now order the NBN service, and nearly 700,000 are connected. In order to manage risk, the NBN regularly prepares for multiple scenarios in the network deployment. The document concerned is part of the ongoing approach, unquote. That is what Mr. Clark said. No, that was in a statement by the NBN Co. They are concerned about ongoing approach of risk mitigation, which we will get to that in just a second, because I have a whole rant to go on about risk mitigation in this NBN network. However, the NBN does not commit to does not comment to news.com.au, which is where this article came from, whether or not it will be replacing some or all of Optus's HFC network. Now, okay, the reason why I bring this up is because, first of all, it's GLS, and we basically, the biggest infrastructure story of 2015 has to be the NBN network and its flops, because we've reported it on this show before that they've had some cabling issues where the price of, forgive me for forgetting at the top of my head, I could probably look troll through show notes real quick, but I don't have the time for that. Ain't nobody got time to stroll through show notes. But the reason why I bring that up is because the NBN Co. does not understand what risk mitigation means. Now, I say that because they really don't. They really, really have no idea what risk mitigation is, because risk mitigation, what I'm led to believe risk mitigation is, or what the NBN should be trying to achieve, is minimizing their risk that what can be caused from decisions made in relation to the NBN network. So, what I'm thinking is they're not really connecting the two together, because, how can you say that you're reducing risk when you're making risky moves by using an old existing network? It doesn't add up. It doesn't add up that you're using this old network. It's like my analogy a couple of weeks ago, right here on the broadcast. A couple of weeks ago, it might have been a month or so now, where it's basically you're getting a community to switch their ways without actually, by using old piping. And I say it ironically enough, basically telling all mothers that they have to switch to formula and then having old pipelines of formula run out. Which, that's not what we've said, and I know that's a little bit of an insensitive thing to say in this country at the moment, but sensitivities with me go right out the window when I'm telling the honest truth. The honest truth is, you're basically telling a bunch of people to switch to this, unrealistically switch to this new way, when you don't have the service there to provide it. So, it's kind of strange that, you're saying you're reducing risk, but you're providing more risk for people by using a network that's nearly at the end of its life cycle. But don't worry, they will provide upgrades and try and update this 1990s pay TV pipeline, by the way, which I remember this story. The 1990s wave of pay TV in the 1990s, it got really, really big here, pay TV in 1995, when that was early 2000s, but when music videos became more of a prevalence here in Australia, realistically, when we got our own music video television, when we got that. And we've had music videos for eternity, but we haven't had those channels. And this wasn't really pre-internet, but it was really pre the video streaming services that we have today. It's pre all that. How can one make the decision to kind of use that old network to kind of, roll out a national broadband network system? So, infrastructure is a bit, you gotta take that. Infrastructure is not great. I mean, I'm both against and for the NBN. I want to state my stance on that. How it's being gone about is a bit wrong, and see the breast milk formula analogy for that. And, the concept of a national broadband network is fantastic. Infrastructure-wise, it's not really achievable. As we continue here on GLS, here on a Thursday, thank you for joining us here on a Thursday. What do we have coming up next? We have, are you in the employment market? Well, we have 5 jobs for you that you could probably easily get into. Well, we have the list, the breakdown of what they involve right after this. Thanks for joining us. It's 12:20.
This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thanks for joining us here on a Thursday. It is a Thursday. Thanks for joining us here on GLS with Dale Campbell, yours truly. That's right, I am Dale Campbell. Thanks for joining us. And we do appreciate your listenership, which, however you try and consume the show, we do appreciate you joining us. Now, are you in the job market? Yes, you say? Or if you're looking for a sea change, you know, if you want to be a part of an industry that is booming, you know, if you want to be in on the in crowd of new Australian economy boomers, then, you know, here are the top 5 jobs that are about to go boom as Australia's economy transitions from resources to service-based industries. Everyone wants to know what jobs will come from. Market research firm IBIS World has identified clothing retailing, physiotherapy services, meat processing, oil and gas extractions, private and government schools as 5 industries set to show faster employment growth in the 2015-2016 and over the next 5 years. Growing wages and demand for skilled employees will provide solid opportunities, quote-unquote, for employment between now and 2020, and the demand for professionals with advanced degrees is expected to rise, IBIS World argues in a report today, quote, the demand in these industries, whether it's for a product or a service they provide, looks to set to continue at least over the next 5 years. So it's not a one-off spike, IBS World industry analyst Spencer Little told news.com.au. So let's break these down a little bit. Clothing retails. They predict that typically labor-intensive industries will increase its reliance on casual workers over the next 5 years as new technologies improve productivity, reducing the need for staff to complete manual tasks such as stocking shelves, serving customers, and managing inventory. While online stores may increase competition, analysts predict that typical stores will attempt to differentiate themselves by offering superior customer service by putting on more staff. They predict a 6.4% increase in the 2015-2016 financial year. As state governments gradually deregulate trading hours over the next 5 years, this will allow shops to stay open longer, requiring more staff, boosting employee numbers, a report from IBIS World reports. Physiotherapy services. They forecast the physiotherapy service industry will grow 2.3% in the next financial year, as they continue to grow at the annualized rate of 2.5% over the next 5 years, reaching 23,000 staff in 2020-2021. Wow, that's a lot of 2020s. This will be largely driven by demand growth. Demand growth. More patients being able to access physiotherapy services through their private health insurance. And as the population ages, odd Australians are more likely to require physiotherapy services. Quote, combined with physiotherapy positions in hospitals, these new establishments will offer graduate physiotherapists responsibly strong employment prospects, report states. Meat processing. Free trade agreements with China, Japan and Korea are expected to gradually increase the demand for Aussie beef over the next 5 years, further increasing revenue from the industry already forecasted to grow at an annualized rate of 8.4% over the 5 years to 2015-2016, then an annualized rate of 2.9% over the period of to 2020-2021. That is really hard to say really quickly. Next, oil and gas extractions. The industry is predicted to grow at an annualized rate of 10.2 million over the next 5 years to reach $66.8 billion, and jobs are expected to grow to follow that, during that period to exceed 27,500 employees in 2020-2021. It's expected to grow 4.9% to the current year, and the total output in the industry is forecast to reach 514 million barrels of oil equivalent in 2015-2016. 16.6% increase over the previous year. And finally, I'm going to pause autoplay because that's what I do on this show, and not that you guys would be able to hear videos that autoplay anyway. Finally, private and government schools. A combination of raising private school employment levels, demands for teachers' unions and increased salaries, and introduction of mandatory Year 10 requirements in 2010 have boosted employment prospects in the schools sector. IBS World argues that although staff-to-student ratios in public school have fallen slightly over 5 years, increased funding could potentially boost employment during the period to 2020-2021. Interesting that five industries that, you know, are going to be booming in the next couple of years. So stay out for those kind of industries if you have an interest in those industries or work in tandem with those industries. Expect a little bit of a boost coming your way. As we continue here on GLS, here on a Thursday, well, that we reported last week about the Paris attacks for the whole first hour of the program. It's getting interesting. And I'm a bit hesitant to bring this up on the show, but, you know, we have to report the big news on the big international news. There is a kind of out for ISIS at the moment. We'll break down what that means, and an Australian poster child for ISIS has been killed while on the run, basically, from Rasad. So we'll bring all that to you as we continue here on GLS. It's 12:31.
Finally found the most generic live show. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thank thank you for joining us here on a Thursday here on the Generic Live Show in our tiny little nest egg time slot here on a Thursday afternoon. Thanks for joining us, whether you're listening. Well, if you're on podcast, you won't notice a thing. You're probably hearing me go, news time slot, what? Yes, actually, we do broadcast this show live, hence it's in the name. If you want to listen to the live show, you can. We are now actually not in our original time slot until the end of the year. We are going to be broadcasting at 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time right here on YouTube at, I think it's youtube.com/genericliveshow. I have to check that out. But you can follow us on Google Plus, gplus.to/genericliveshow. That is probably the best way to get to us. Now, I'm a little bit hesitant to bring this up, but it has dominated the media a little bit over the last couple of days in the wake of the terror attacks in Paris, because it's, you can't avoid something like this. There has been numerous amounts of attacks on Syria and that sort of area where it's believed that, excuse me, the terror group referred to as ISIS are based. And we do have a story about how, and boy, am I going to get into it here in just a little bit. I love when I get in fisticuffs with myself. That makes for good radio, doesn't it? When the hosts argue with the hosts, that makes it a little bit interesting. But we have a story about how a girl, behind a poster girl, if you will, for ISIS, got killed when trying to flee. I have that story in a sec. However, if you haven't heard this story in the last week, a Russian bomb plane that was going to drop bombs on Syria went up in flames when they entered in Turkish in the Turkish airspace. So the Turkish responded, of course, when someone unrightfully enters into your airspace, the Turkish shot them down. So that is what happened, and they crashed kind of a little ways away from when they entered into the airspace. So we have this story. It's quite a long story, so I won't depict it all, because it is an in-depth story, and it's not a story that we typically bring up here on the show, because we are a light show, typically, apart from the Paris attacks that we covered last week. However, the story thickens today when the Turkish army released a series of audio recordings of apparent warnings issued to the Russian jet before it downed near Syrian border after the surviving pilot denied the plane ever violated Turkish airspace. The audio recordings, which I didn't capture out to play on the show because we maintain our family friendliness, even though we bring up stories like this, we try and bring the stories in a family-friendly manner, so no matter whether you're listening, whether you are kind of a parent and you are playing us in your car with your kids, we kind of bring the stories to you in a family-friendly manner. And even when we are in the time slot of 10:30 p.m. at night, 10 at night, till 10 till midnight at night, we do kind of deserve this family-friendly podcast format. But anyway, that's besides the point. The point is, these audio recordings included such things as, this is Turkish Air Force speaking on guard. You're approaching Turkish airspace. Change your heading south immediately. A voice in one of the recordings heard to be saying. The navigator of the two-seater Su-24 bomber told Russian journalists Turkish jet fighters had issued no warning before firing. The captain, who received who retrieved from northern Syria in search and rescue mission, said that it was impossible that he and fellow crew member could have crossed the Turkish airspace accidentally. The co-pilot, I think. Yes. Yeah, the co-pilot was reported to be killed by accident. The Russian Defense Ministry said the pilot died when he was shot at midair after ejecting and attempting to parachute to safety. An escalation of tensions. Russia says it would deploy long-range air defense missiles to its base in Syria and destroy any target that may threaten its warplanes. If Russia shoots down a Turkish airplane, Turkish, a NATO member, would proclaim itself under attack and ask the alliance for military assistance. Australian Foreign Prime Minister Julie Bishop acknowledged that the sides were offering two conflicting visions of what that occurred, but it was a positive sign that the country's foreign ministers planned to meet. Quote, even though both sides are pretty significant claims against the other actions indicate they both realize what's at stake and this could be so easily escalated out of control, Ms. Bishop said. Quote, there were some positive signs overnight that while still very young, in fact, a great way to pragmatic coming together to see how they can resolve this. The Turkey has said that its forces warned the Russian plane 10 times over a 5-minute period over radio channels before firing on the aircraft. Colonel Steve Warren, a spokesperson for the U.S. military in Baghdad, confirmed hearing the warnings and said that the Russian aircraft discarded them. Turkey is always also playing recordings of warnings for NATO snippets, which appeared in Turkish media. But the Russian captain said that he heard nothing. By the way, I want to point something out here. They weren't targeting Turkey. I just want to make this clear. So, there's that, because it shows the particular path that they were going to go on. But they weren't targeting Turkey, so I don't understand what Turkey's all up in arms about, but anyway. They do show a map of what Turkey alleges. Mind you, they were only in Turkey's airspace for a brief period. And they were hit by the missile outside of Turkish airspace, according to the Turkish. So, I don't understand why the Turkish is all up in arms when they're not at target anyway. And I don't understand why, the Turkish are up in arms. But it is, everyone is on edge, and everyone is kind of gathering together and kind of, you know, making sure we're all at peace at a time like this, which I appreciate. So, you know, there's that. But anyway, so there's claims that There's Obama, there's Bishop, and there's the French Prime Minister. They're all going to Russia now to peace talk, basically, to the Turkish going, hey, stop, basically. So, you know, that's always fun. So, next up, though, and here's where it gets really interesting, and here's where I'm divided. And here's the story. I know I don't shy away from much on this program. I know I can bring up pretty much anything on this program. But an Australian ISIS poster girl have reported being killed while trying to flee Raqqa. She's frequently appeared in ISIS propaganda, and also a friend of hers is also believed to be dead. An Australian teen who joined ISIS was beaten by militants for trying to escape Syria and go home to her family, Australian media reported yesterday. She was 17 and she was killed trying to flee Raqqa, the de facto capital of Islamic State, also known as ISIS or ISIL. Kesanovic appeared frequently in ISIS propaganda, along with her 16-year-old friend Sabrina Selimic. She was beaten to death with a hammer, the Australian newspaper Oslik reported, quoting an unnamed Turkish woman who lived with her. Selvik is also believed to be dead, having to be killed fighting in Syria over a year ago. Australian Foreign Ministry refused to comment on her death or whether they had confirmation, but the government sources have said that Kinnistic had been reported in contact with her family recently, and she said she wanted to return home, according to the Huffington Post. They'd both been born in Bosnia, left Austria in April 2014. At the time, they posted on social media going, "Don't look for us. We serve Allah, and we die for Him." The girls appeared photographed wearing Islamic head coverings, holding assault rifles, surrounded by male jihadists in ISIS materials. Unconfirmed reports said that they were both married off to ISIS jihadi fighters, became pregnant, but a year ago disillusioned and had just had enough of violence and declared to return to Austria. Now, I'm tired. Oh, by the way, autoplay video. Yay. Distracting. Now, I'm in two worlds on this. I'm torn because it sucks hearing about people dying in these circumstances. It does suck indeed. However, and I know this is a really, really unpopular state to be in, because this whole situation around violence against women at the moment is so strong, it's so prevalent, particularly here in this country. But we've only got a little bit of time here, so I could have to articulate my argument really quickly. But I think I'm torn because we have this big Violence Against Women, Australia Says No campaign, which has just recently popped up again, and these people were serving bad. And I want to bring to the point that these people, and I don't think about this about every single person, by the way. These are bad people. They, and I can't believe these words are about to come out of my mouth, so please excuse me, but these people deserve to die. These women, whether they be women or male, I hold the stance for both genders, because we can't have exclusions, trust me. We have exclusions of women can do whatever they like, I'm sorry, but realistically, no, they can't. These people are terrorists. And in a world where we're threatened now by terrorism in all forms, just look at that suicide bomber that was a female. No one went after her because she was a female. And I hate to say that because it's true. Send your hate mail to me if you like. It's not going to go anywhere. My opinion isn't going to change on this one. These are bad women. Bad women should be deserved, and in all equality and feminism and all that at the moment, all women should be treated as equally as men. If women are bad and men are bad, they deserve the same punishment. I know that is hard for me to say, and it's a hard stance to take, and it's kind of a little bit of a, you know, a different stance than what I normally think, but these are terrible people. There is no if, muts, buts, or babies about it. These people are serving bad people. If they're bad, and if they get taken out by whatever means they do, by militants or by anyone at all, they deserved what was coming to them. I'm sorry, but they do. So, ta-da! Deo's unpopular opinion of the day! Ta-da! Anyway, that definitely is not the clip of the week. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us now that we've lost all our listeners as we continue here on GLS. If anyone else is listening, we have a story about how Facebook can help you get over a relationship. As we continue here on GLS, something a little bit light-handed, Facebook offers Take a Break, a service helping you deal with breakups. As we continue, it's 12:51.
This is The Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Joining us here on a Thursday here on the Generic Live Show, whether you're listening to us live or on your hard drive, we do appreciate your listenership, however you do choose to consume the show. It is an honor to be serving you. Yes, if you've gone through a terrible breakup, we've all been there. We've all been there, we've all done that. It's just a fact of life. Or if you haven't, you will get there, and yeah, you'll know what we're talking about. But now, Facebook, if you haven't, Facebook is making it even easier for you. Facebook recently launched Take a Break. Now, you might think they're selling Kit Kats, but no, you'd be wrong. It's a feature that helps you deal by breaking up by limiting the amount of content shown to you and your ex. This is an essential tool, according to the Huffington Post, in the unending nightmare that getting over your old flame. Essentially, in theory, it's an out of sight, out of mind tool, which, you know, the age-old 6-year-old in me says, if you sweep it under the rug, it's not there. Unfortunately, absence makes the heart grow fonder. Users have already started complaining about wiping a former lover from Facebook creates more questions. What are they doing? Who are they with? Are they having a great time with a boat full of models? Are they enjoying Tito's more than what they should, particularly the bottom half? All these are questions that are asked when you don't see or hear from your ex more. Well, ponder no more. Presenting Watch Them Burn, a new feature that shows your ex losing their job, dating people that are less attractive than you, and becoming desperate loser of the breakup. When you end a relationship, this screen will pop up, and it's a screen of it uses an example of Taylor. Other things you can do. You can see less from Taylor, limit what that he can see, and edit your photos, get started, blah, blah, blah. And it says, you're better off. Feel free to look at Taylor's posts. We think you'll like what you see. Or you can select Watch Taylor Burn. You will get the best thing he ever had going And now things are about to get horrible real quick. Strange. From that moment on, Facebook will block their posts and instead showing you the horrible things that happened to this person who shattered your heart. Soon you'll be seeing feeds like this. Okay, my boss just fired me in front of the whole office, and the reason? Oh, you're not committed enough. Oh. So are these real posts or these? And this. A sponsored link, tough break, later tough break, unemployed surfer beat up by children, and this. People need to stop calling me that. Okay, let's not look at that. Meanwhile, Facebook will pepper in awesome things happening to you, luckiest girl on the planet. Okay. And Facebook will show you your ex getting zero likes from here on out. Oh, that's pretty cool. This should put the KO in your feelings, the old what's his name again. And boom, you're cured. Thanks to Facebook. And you're fully start ready to start dating again. This is terrible. This is awful. Like, this is the epitome of awful. Who would want a service like this? I mean, seriously. This is terrible. Why? Okay, why? Okay. Full disclaimer here. I have had a terrible breakup in the past. I'm not going to go into too much details because we don't have the time to. But all I wanted was to see less of this person. I didn't want anything terrible to go to this person, only because we had to still work in close proximity to each other. So I didn't want anything terrible to happen to this person. I just wanted to see less of them. I didn't. Why do people want to watch the world burn? It's so bad. I don't understand. And I just spat all over my keyboard. But it's so bad. This doesn't help with your emotions. It just creates a fake, fictitious world, and you're gonna start just spreading rumors about false rumors about everyone. It's just why? Why do people want to watch the world burn? I don't understand. I don't understand why this is the thing. Ugh, frustrates me that Facebook is just helping with mental issues. Oh, it's strange. As we continue here on GLS, on that distressing note, Australia is about to get a health service overhaul. Is it good for this country, or is it bad for this country? We have the answers as we continue. It's 1 o'clock.